Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavahitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Page 84. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.11.12. The individual soul bereft of Krishna consciousness has many ideas and activities created in the mind by the external energy. They have been existing from time immemorial. Sometimes they are manifest in the waking state and in the dream state. But during deep sleep, unconsciousness, or trance, they disappear. A person who is liberated in this life, Jivan Mukta, can see all these things vividly. Footnote 50. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments. The knower of the field is twofold, the Paramatma and the Jiva. The Paramatma was mentioned in the previous verse and will be explained in the next verse. The Jiva is of two types, conditioned and liberated. The conditioned Jiva was described as being embraced by the mind and thinking he is the body in verse 6. The liberated Jiva is not embraced by the mind and has no false conception of his body. The conditioned Jiva has been understood. What is the liberated Jiva? The liberated Jiva, nor of the field, knows vichashte, the transformations of the mind, but does not identify with them and enjoy them. It is thus free of samsara, whereas the conditioned Jiva is bound by samsara. The mind is the covering on the Jiva, since it is made of maya and performs impure actions which are against recognition of the Lord. The transformations of the mind have been present with the Jiva without beginning. Nitya. Why are they not visible at all times then? They are manifest during waking and dream sleep, dream state, and invisible during deep sleep and at the time of universal devastation. Sardartha Darshani 5.11.12. So we're establishing the point that the Jiva is always conscious, and that the consciousness then comes and goes according to whether they're awake or asleep. Right? So that's there. But here we're seeing is that from the context of the unconscious, means not unconscious, means those who are not self-realized, and of those who are self-realized. So those who are not self-realized can't see this happening because they identify with the mind. So they think it's them. The transformations are themselves. Well, the realized soul understands it's not. It's just the transformations of the material energy. Right? The Jiva, what do they know about how to engage themselves? Right? Just like, let's take for example, in the spiritual world, how do you know what to do for Krishna?
You're being told.
You're being told. You learn from others. You see what they do. You follow that. So in other words, Yoga Maya is making the overall arrangements, and then the other devotees within that, right? Because they're fixed in Krishna consciousness. The same thing reflects here. How do you know what to do in material energy? Right? So it's Mahamaya, right? She takes care of it. Right? So the transformations of the mind then are according to what is your interest. Like in the spiritual world, what is your interest? That's the area of Yoga Maya you'll work in. Right? You know, cowherd boys, Mother Jashoda with the other elder gopis, they'll work in that sphere. And so then the opportunities that come up and all that are going to come from that environment. They're not going to come from another environment. Right? And so in the material world, we don't know, depending upon our interest, because we don't have a fixed position. We don't have a sthayi bhava. That's why we call it sthayi bhava, because it's fixed. It's natural, that's normal, but here it's not. Every lifetime it's a different bhava, and in the same lifetime the bhavas can change. Does that make sense? You know, somebody's really happy and all that, going along, something drastic happens, now they're grumpy. You know, like this, you know. Does that make sense? You know, it's like, what do you call it? Ebenezer Scrooge, when he was a young kid, was a very enthusiastic boy. But something happened. Right? Does that make sense? That's just how it works. So, you all know Ebenezer Scrooge?
Yeah.
No? Nobody?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to say at least one. Somebody knows. I guess it's just a, how you say, an Anglo-Saxon tradition. He's the guy that...
with the ghosts.
Yeah, with the ghosts and that for Christmas, because he's such a miser.
Oh, yes.
You know, they play it every Christmas. Like that. If you're not much into Christmas, you probably don't bump
Christmas
into it.
Christmas is not a part of our tradition.
Yeah, yeah, like that. So. Unless you happen to be over at the Goy's for Christmas, then you would know what we're talking about. Okay. So, where were we? We're discussing something very esoteric before we bumped into... That's why you don't associate with materialists that make you forget Krishna. Right?
The transformation of mind is...
Yes. So therefore, then, it's not fixed. It's always changing. So, accordingly, then Maya arranges how you function within that. Otherwise, you don't know what to do. You have the enthusiasm. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, the first time you're in some new situation. But you've heard about, you know, you think about it, you heard about it, but you don't know what to do there. You have to learn from others, right? So the material energy through the mind and the modes of nature, you know, these three kinds of ego, then covers the living entity and shows all the different ways according to their position, you know, a combination of their desire and what they deserve. Then makes all the arrangements, and the jiva identifies with it and goes along with it as if it's themselves. Right? So the self-realized souls here, they can you can vividly see this, that that's what's going on. It's not the soul. It's just the mind, the modes of nature. You know, when they're awake, they act in one way. When they're asleep, they act in another. And then when it's deep sleep, it's another again, which is similar to at the time of, you know, what is it? Universal devastation, when the jivas go back into the Lord. So it's the self-realized soul can see this, right? So then, what does that mean about those who were discussing in the Vedanta Sutra verse? They're not self-realized. Because they can't even understand the soul, the consciousness, all these kind of things. And these are the big scholars. Right? These six schools, these are the big scholars. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, that's the point. Unless you have, you know, God consciousness, you can't understand these things. Because otherwise, then who are you? Right? And if you're not the body, you're not the mind, you're not all these things that you're going for, either, you know, fruit of activities or liberation, then you become distressed, because then what are you supposed to do? Does that make sense? That's why the process is as gradual or as quick as we're willing to accept the identity of being Krishna conscious. You know what I'm saying? Let us say, you have a kid. They like to play video games. Okay? They're a devotee, but, you know, this is what they do. Right? But then they understand Krishna consciousness. You don't require this. You could chant. You could do some service. You could do something else. You understand? Yeah. So what is stopping from doing that? The Krishna conscious option.
The desire to do it.
Yeah, so it's the identity that this is what's going to make me happy. That's, I mean, the individual soul has many ideas and activities created in the mind by the external energy. So the external energy creates this. It's an identity. You think you have to do this. You're a gamer. You do all these things. But you don't have to, because there's plenty of people that don't play games. You know? Amazing, but true. Like that. I've even met people that don't have phones. You know, smart, intelligent, you know, active. Rare, but it's true. How you say? What is it? Fact is stranger than fiction. Yeah. So it's just the identity that I could just chant my rounds, or I could, you know, read, or I could go do something else. I could go do some preaching service at the temple, you know, associate with devotees, or, you know. But so it's as gradual, as quick as we're willing to shift that consciousness, shift that identity. Does that make sense? That's actually the crux. It's us. It's not something else. We always like to put it on the external. The externals are there, but it's our attachment to the externals. So we'll say it's not practical because of our attachment to the externals. So therefore we function within that and connect things to Krishna. And as we get purified, then as the identity changes, then we're able to do other things. Does this make sense? Okay, yes.
Right, so if we look at this situation logically, we have enough understanding that we are not that body, and
yes,
whatever, you know, bath we have, it's not a sthayi bath.
Yes, yes.
And on the other side, as a practicing devotees, our sthayi bath is there, but it's not revealed yet. So how do we function in between those? Because it's like...
So, yes, but what is it that even you don't, like, just like you said, even you don't have an identity within something. Let's say you have, just for an example, someone's never been to, let's say, some kind of a sport event, right?
Yeah.
And so then they've heard that, you know, people go and it must be something, a lot of things happening. They maybe read a few things about it and all that, or have some friends that are interested in it, but they were never interested. So they decide to go. What is driving them to go?
The inspiration.
The inspiration. And the inspiration is in what?
In this area.
Yes, but I'm saying, that's the thing itself, but what is it that they're why go?
They're friends.
They're friends, but what will be gained from that?
Happiness.
Happiness. Right? Means that they're friends, and so being with their friends and doing something different. So there's an enthusiasm, though they have no idea really what's happening and what they'll do, what's their identity within that. Right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? The friends have identity. You don't.
Yeah.
But you can go, you can take part, you can be enthusiastic, you can do all the things to get yourself there.
Yeah. That's the position?
Yeah, but it's just on the other side.
Yeah.
Right? Because you want to go to enjoy the sport. Here, you want to go and serve Krishna. So, we have to understand is that the generic sthayi bhav is that of servant of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a devotee everybody can have. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's important. So it's not that you have to have the specifics, because that'll take time. Even you go there, you know, where would you sit? You have a stadium, where to sit? You understand? Those who are experienced, they know where to sit. You know, and also the sitting will depend upon your nature. What are your considerations? You know, is it about seeing the overall thing, seeing something up close, seeing certain aspects, you know, that all these things happen in this place, not in that place? You know, it's closer to the exit, it's closer to where all the food is. You know, it's away from all the guys that, you know, make so much noise and trouble and slobber all over everything and stuff like that. So, you know, you just according to your position, you figure out what to do. Yeah, and also you sit in a place where their boots aren't so big, you know, like that. Because if they got the bobber boots, you want to not be there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Not even just behind the people or just behind them, like that, you know, and close to the exit. So like that, you just learn what to do. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. Even you remember Krishna at the time of death, you're in the spiritual world, in your spiritual body, in your spiritual situation, you still have to learn from everybody what to do with it. Does that make sense? So that's why this idea of the sahaja is, no, I know all that, and then I can do all these things. You won't be able to. What you'll do? Does that make sense? You know, it's like anything that's there, you have that new enthusiast that just happens to have some money and learns the lingo and all that and hangs around and tries to look cool and everybody else thinks they're a dweeb. Right? That's the Sahajas. No one else wants to have anything to do with them. Because they don't know what they're doing. They don't belong there. You know, you could say, oh, but they have enthusiasm and all that. Great, but you should have the enthusiasm to learn how to do the real thing. Otherwise, it's just false ego. I know this, I am this. No, you're not. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
so like this. And then because of that, they'll make mistakes. They're there to serve. That they'll think, I'll do this because I'll enjoy that. I want to do this because I'll enjoy that. It's not a problem doing that. It's a matter of I'm doing that because it pleases Krishna. That's the difference. So when it talks about the Astakaliya Lila, it means these are the things to please Krishna. But if you're thinking, well, I'd like to do that and I'd like to do this, okay, nice. But the point is until that gets to the point of it's about pleasing Krishna, it's not Astakaliya Lila. You know what I'm saying? So just knowing it and being this and doing that, that's it's not. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the whole.
So then, can we say that even as sadhakas, first of all, the generic mode is of being the dasyabhav.
Yes.
And then you have the specific.
Not dasyabhav.
Dasya means being a servant of Krishna.
Yes, but it doesn't mean it's the servant rasa.
No, not the servant.
Yeah,
but
it just means
that
just like when it says shakyam with the Lord.
Friendship.
That doesn't mean it's the Shakya Rasa.
No, it's not the Rasa.
It just means that friendship of that closeness and identity with the Lord.
So as a servant of Krishna, that is the generic mode of all the Brajavasis. And even the sadhakas while practicing, they carry this particular mode. Okay.
They try to gain that particular mode.
Yeah. Okay. So, then while practicing, when some devotees, you know, they come to know about their specifics.
And they come to know about their specifics.
Yeah,
nice. But how do you know that they know?
Because someone has shared.
But why would they share?
Why close friends don't share with each other?
The conditioned nature based on the three kinds of false ego of the modes of nature, what has that got to do with the jiva? So friendship based on that, then? Yeah? So unless there's some spiritual depth to the relationship, and unless there's some natural nature, then?
Yeah, it's a spiritual depth only.
Spiritual depth, okay,
yes.
Great.
So then, but just by knowing, you know, the specifics is of no use because one cannot do anything.
No, so because you know, but just like we said before, the little girl knows she wants to get married, but can she do anything with it? You know, she's got her mother's wedding dress, and she's got her mother's, you know, old high-heeled shoes and stuff like that she found in the attic. But is there something she can do? They can play, but it's just games. For married women, it's just games. It's not real. You know what I'm saying? So there's nothing you can do. Like it says in Brahma Samhita, it says right there, Brahma understood his position as a maidservant of Krishna. But that's all it is. He understood, that's it. That's all the more. So therefore, that's what, then get it together to become the, have the mood of servant, so you get to the point where you have the right attitude, you're purified, so you can use that. So what if you know? What's the big deal?
Yeah.
We make it into a big deal, but what? So what?
Yeah, so again, like we should not get distracted by such things, but rather, you know, more focus, you know, on how we can be developing our more attitude of being, you know, as a Nityadas of the Lord.
Yes.
That is the correct attitude, right?
Yes, that's the correct attitude. Because it doesn't matter. You know, you don't know. It doesn't matter. You know, it's just like, let's say, you have a devotee, say a neophyte devotee. Somehow or another, they remember Krishna at the time of death. Right?
Yes,
now, when they are there in the spiritual world, then, you know, they'll have their spiritual form. But do they know what to do with that to serve Krishna?
No.
You have to learn. Like that. So, that's the whole point is, even you have an idea, so what? You can't use it until you're trained in it. And unless you're liberated, you can't be trained in it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Only on the liberated platform, as an Uttamata, only then you can be trained. Trained means by others, not by reading the books and thinking, well, I can do this. Because that's the thing. Has many ideas and activities created in the mind by the external energy. You know?
Maharaj, why we get tired of making this Krishna conscious decision, even though we have peaceful experiences when we do it?
It just happens that the soul gets tired, you know, working. Because anything you do, they get tired. So unless you get a taste in the Krishna consciousness, then you can get tired. Once you have a taste, you won't get tired. Yeah, it's just like anything you do, you get tired. You even get tired of being tired. You know,
it's called chronic
fatigue.
Chronic fatigue. Yeah, yeah. You get tired of being tired. Yeah. Adhikarna 13. The jivas are not all pervading. Nityopa labhya prasanga dikaranam. Sutra reference 2330. Adhikarna Prakashika. Here in this Adhikarna, the Shankya followers artificially enforce one of the qualities of Brahman onto the jiva, and thus put forward the doctrine of, quote, an all-pervading jiva. That develops into the following mistaken concepts. One, jiva simultaneously conscious and unconscious. Two, jiva only conscious. And three, jiva only unconscious. You know, see, there's variety. Right? Right? That's what it said in the previous Bhagavatam verse, right? Many ideas, right? The Sutrakar explains the impossibility of all these through common sense assessment. The second claim is that, quote, consciousness comes into existence by contacting the senses, end quote, is refuted by their doctrine of an all-pervading jiva. Right? Because if they're all-pervading, they're already that. Since such a jiva would contact all bodies externally and hence would be externally conscious. But since this is not observable, it is thereby established that the jiva is necessarily atomic and is all-pervading in its material body by its quality of consciousness. The Supreme Lord is in truth all-pervading, and the opponents simply entail this aspect of the Lord onto the jiva. Because that's, you have the Lord, you have the jiva and the material energy. They all have their distinct qualities, right? But they're all based on the Lord coming from the Lord. So, if you leave the Lord out of it, that means the Lord's qualities have to go for the jiva or for material energy. Like that. Does that make sense? Or if you leave out the jiva, then you have to put those qualities somewhere else. But generally, they'll always keep themselves in the loop. Right? And material energy, generally, they're not trying to get rid of, because that you can enjoy, you know, or enjoy getting rid of it, one or the other. And, the Lord, then that's somehow or another the first one to go, right? You know. Okay, footnote 51. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan proves that the Supreme Lord is all-pervading. Some persons may believe that the scripture passage, beginning with the words, Tvam Vaham Asmi Bhagavo, describes a situation where the individual spirit soul and the Supreme are not different. The truth, however, is that the Supreme is the all-pervading Supreme Master, and the individual soul, spirit souls, are always dependent upon Him. For His life breath, for His ability to speak, and for other things also, the individual soul is always dependent on prana, life breath. Right? So, because of prana, then you see all the senses, the body, the senses work. And so, that's coming from Krishna. It was one prana. Right? But it manifests in different ways depending on what the prana is doing. Right? We'll call it by different things. But it's the same activity. I mean, same. Just like you have Yeah, I'm forgetting the word. All that comes up is like contract or something like that. So you have a person that they know all the aspects of, you know, construction and maintenance and all that. So it's one guy, but he comes to your house and he's working with the pipes, you call him, he's doing plumbing. He works with the electricity, you know, then that's the electrician aspect. You know, he lays the rug, he's doing that. You know, or he paints, or he does, you know, fixes the window, he does carpentry work, or, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
So it's one guy, but you would call him according, you know, just like if somebody else came over who doesn't know it's one guy. They'll see the guy going and seeing like that, and they go, oh yeah, I need someone. Hey, where's your plumber from? But he's not a plumber. So the same way is the life heirs, they're not of all these different things, but depending on what they're doing, then you call it, you know, by the different names. Like we see with Paranjana, there's a snake. It's one snake. But all the functions of you know, how you say? Not even remembering those. All I'm getting is Vyana, Apana, Udana,
Samana.
Vyana, did we say?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. You know, so all these different, we call it by all these. And they have more names. When you get into the second five, then I think, you know, you have David Dutta or Dutta Treya, all these different other far out names.
So in the next father, we will see that. These five basically comprise, been collectively known as the chief pran.
Yes.
We come to know based on the functionality, it's apana, samana, vyana.
Yes, yes. Okay. Yeah, so it's dependent upon the Lord. The Lord is the life breath, right? And because of that, it's going. So all the sense, he comes in contact with the senses, but the senses, why do the senses function? That they're not even thinking about. Right? The sense is functioning. I come in contact with a sense, then by that contact I become whatever it is, conscious or everything like that. But why is the sense functioning? It's dead matter. So that means the Lord's pervading it. Right? He's pervading, not us. Because if we're pervading, we'd already be there. So how does he become? That means he's not all pervading. So that's the problem, is that their philosophies will always be contradictory because they're based on the modes of nature. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
This is described in the following discussion of prana, life breath, in Chandogya Upanishad 5.1.15. Quote, it is not said, quote, the words independently speak, end quote, nor is it said, quote, the eyes independently see, end quote, nor is it said, quote, that the ears independently hear, end quote, or subquote, or whatever you call those, mini quote.
Single quote.
Single quote. Nor is it said, single quote, the mind independently thinks, end single quote. It's a bit long. It is the prana, life force, that arranges speech, sight, hearing, and thought, end double quote. Okay. That the Supreme Lord is present everywhere is described in these words of the Smriti Shastra, Vishnu Purana. Quote, whoever comes from you, be he a demigod, is created by you. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are the creator of the universes. You are present everywhere. End quote. In Bhagavad Gita 11:40, Arjuna tells Lord Krishna, quote, O Lord, you are all-pervading, and thus you are everything. End quote. Thus, the scripture passage, beginning with the words, Tvam Vaham Asmi Bhagavo, means that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is all-pervading. Present in the bodies, senses, and all else of even the liberated souls. In this sense, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is everything. Any other interpretation of that scriptural passage is useless. But because it doesn't make sense. This makes sense, because we know Brahman is all-pervading. But the jivas, and everything's based on Brahman. So that means that the soul, being connected with the prana, it's because of the connection, the prana's connection with the Supreme Soul. Right? That's what makes it function. Right? So it's not that it's functioning separate. Otherwise, then you have to explain how is it that the senses are functioning?
Mm-hmm.
Or how is the life force functioning? So, yes.
We know that we can divide everything into three categories: material, metaphysical, and transcendental.
Hmm.
So, materialists, they explain everything from the material point of view.
Yes.
And the spiritualists, from the metaphysical. And we explain from the devotional part.
Yes.
But here, when, for example, they say all those Shankaras, they take the metaphysical thing?
It depends. Some are more physical, some are more metaphysical. It just depends upon the particular aspect. Because here they're not going back to the metaphysics. It means they're kind of dabbling. You could say it's meta-metaphysics. Mm-hmm. It's that they're kind of dabbling in it, but the point is why does the metaphysical even function?
Yes.
Because of the spiritual. So they don't know. So how would the metaphysical function on its own? So it has to be a source of all this.
So when they say, for example, that everything comes from Brahman, Pradhan or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. So they actually claim that this is a metaphysical thing. It's not spiritual for them.
No, it's never spiritual for them. They might say it's spiritual, like the person out in the, you know, very pleasant weather and a, you know, clear, pleasant days, the sun comes up and the birds are chirping and the butterflies are flitting, and they'll claim that that's a spiritual experience. It's just they don't know. You know, that's what I said before, is those liberated souls, they can see all this very vividly. So it's not even just clearly, it's vividly. It's because that's what they see. They, when they see a living entity, they see what modes in that their personality is functioning under, and the soul's identifying with that. So because they identify, you deal with them that way. You know, it's just like the kid comes into the room, you know, and it's not a improper time, and you know, they're, let's say, a king, and they're talking, and they're like, how do you talk to them as a king, like that? That's how it works. So that's what the liberated souls, how they deal. So this idea of having to adjust the preaching isn't real, because they only see the specifics of that conditioning of that soul, how they're identifying. So you, of course, you talk to them in that way. You know, that's you know, it's just like, yeah, you use the spoon to pick the stuff up and put it in your mouth. You have to tell that to the people at the table? No, it's just it's known. That's how it works. Does that make sense? So, therefore, being sensitive to the individual there, but you're presenting the actual philosophy. Because to present anything else, what's the point? The modes of nature are already taking care of their external experience. Why do we need to get involved and add something? You know what I'm saying? Like that. So unless we're giving them an opportunity to contact Krishna consciousness, then what's, like some preachers in their environment, people don't want to hear philosophy, but they're very willing to take part in kirtan and take prasad, you know, and because of that they appreciate their vote. So that's what you do, but you're not making it any less. Does that make sense? You know, or if it's there, it, by the words you use, you see, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur is very expert at choosing words that would mean one thing to the materialist and another thing to the spiritualist. You know, it's like the those discussions in the 11th and 12th canto, where it's the form is jnana, but it's actually pure bhakti. But that means amongst devotees, you're talking pure bhakti. You know, but amongst others, then you may have to talk in words that they, at least in delicate points, they see it in, like we'll say the word liberal. But for us, liberal means broad-minded. The political sense of liberal, we don't mean that, because it's not very broad, it's very narrow. Does that make sense? But because they say liberal, then people are happy. You know what I'm saying? Same with conservative. When we say conservative, we mean it's broad-minded, not the narrow-minded aspect of political conservatism, you know, political or social. Does that make sense? So we don't have to change our position. It's just you choose the words according to that conditioning of the person, which then from this is that following in the footsteps of the great personality, we see what they do, and so then we follow that because they know what they're dealing with. You know what I'm saying? People were, you could say, as far as Western kind of, what do you call it? Eastern philosophies and this and that. People in general, much more ignorant, much less open and tolerant and all that, when Prabhupada was there. So you see how he dealt with them. And he found that those in the yoga studios weren't that great option. You know what I'm saying? Because they're just bewildered by the externals of it. They're not actually interested in the philosophy. So he found those that are less than that, less pious, and was able to show how to catch them. Is that what I'm saying? And so then you don't have to make that, you don't have to adjust other than using the particular words and tone and all that that match that, how that living entity is identified. Is that?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Here someone may protest. One may accept or not accept an indirect interpretation of the scriptural passage beginning with the words Tvam Vaham Asmi Bhagavo. Still, one should ignore all varieties of qualities that begin with the Supreme's all-pervasiveness and the individual soul's minuteness, and instead think only of consciousness, because they are both consciousness, the Supreme and the soul are the same. So they're taking the obvious differences. Oh, don't worry about that. We're discussing consciousness here. And in consciousness, they're both conscious, so they're the same. Therefore, then, now we'll try to say that the details are therefore the same. We ignore the obvious details that show they're not, then on something that is common, then say, oh, they're the same. You know, it's just like, what do you call it? You know, say, hey, guy who's, you know, how you say, the garbage collector is a, you know, in a human form, and the president is in a human form. Therefore, the garbage collector and the president are the same. You know, that's what they're doing. Yes.
There's that famous verse, Nitya Nitya Nam Chetanas Chetana Nam. Mm. So if we quote only that part, means we equal.
Yes.
But then the second part says that the one fulfills desires of everybody else. So he is the one, and we are many.
Yes.
But
yes.
If we just take that, then we don't have to say the rest.
Yes, yes, yes. That's exactly. So you just take what parts they like and leave the rest of it. You know, it's just like you have the meal. The kid takes the sweet and the fried things, leaves out all the other things, you know, like that. And it's the same process. You know how you say? The definite road to health. Right? You know.
Yes.
Yes. To this I reply, that is a foolish suggestion. You cannot simply choose to ignore the eternal qualities of the Supreme Lord and the individual souls. Anyway, you cannot say anything about the Supreme, for you think the Supreme is beyond the description of words. Right? So, they'll say, Supreme is beyond, that's why we can't discuss it. We can only discuss what's down here, what you can use words. You know? That's the fun part. So therefore, then you can't talk about this. We don't say that, we can talk about it. You say that, you shouldn't talk about it. You know? Then, it works out good. Vedanta Shamantaka 3, 18 through 19. Summary of Adhikarana 13, Shamshaya, so their doubt. Is it proper or not to say that the Atma is conscious alone and all-pervading? Purva Paksha. So this is their presentation. It is correct to say that the Jiva is all-pervading because its effects are realized everywhere. If the Jivas were atomic, it could not experience happiness and suffering in all its limbs. If the Jiva were of medium size, it would not be eternal and karmas due to it would be destroyed, while undeserving karmas would be received, since the jiva would be too big for some bodies and too small for others. Right? So, you can't be atomic. So their idea is you can't be atomic because otherwise you wouldn't be able to feel your whole body. And right, how do you receive the karmas in that? You know, something with the hands and you can't even feel your hands. Right? But at the same time, as he can't be medium-sized because some bodies, by karma, are he'd be too big to fit in. Right? If he's medium-sized, how would he fit in, you know, a mosquito body or something? So therefore, in their term, he has to be all-pervading. But then you're way too big for everything if you follow that philosophy.
But we already dealt with.
Yes, but... yeah, that's right. Yes.
Here in this particular section, almost half of the path is dealing with the jivas only, you know, all the different aspects. So that's how, again, it has been repeated, but now in a very, very broader sense, because even prakriti is going to come in the picture.
Okay. Yeah. Sutta 2.3.30. So in other words, repetition gets the point across. There, you know, there'll be some slight little difference in here. You know, you can't, you know, you can't eat, how you say? No cookies, because it's, you know, it's just before dinner time. Okay. Then that, he was picking up one kind of cookie. Then you think, okay, well, what about this kind of cookie? You know what I'm saying? You know, what about half a cookie?
Yes.
What about only the chocolate chips from the cookie?
Yes.
Okay, we won't eat the cookies. We'll just eat the crumbs in the bottom of the jar. That's what Vedanta Sutra is dealing with. Is that from every angle, it's no. Sutra 2, 3:30. Nityopa labhya nupa labdhi prasango nyatara niyamo vanyata. Nitya, eternal. Upa labdhi, perception. Anupa labdhi, non-perception. Prasanga, result. Anyatara, otherwise. Niyama, restriction. Va, or anyata, otherwise. The proposition of an all-pervading jiva would mean that it would be eternally conscious and unconscious, or eternally conscious or eternally unconscious.
Why is that?
Yeah, we see that now in the Siddhanta. Explain
it. Well, if he's all-pervading, he would have to be... Yeah. How do you... It means so many things are unconscious. The rock is unconscious. That means he'd have to be unconscious to be, you know, in that position of the rock. But other living entities are conscious. Because if he's all-pervading, then he's everything.
So that's
the problem. Because you're on the material. Or everything's conscious, but then there's a problem there because so many things are not. Or if you talk about those things, like the wall, then it's unconscious, so then he'd have to be unconscious. And if he's unconscious, then how does he know who he is? So it just brings up too many problems. You know, does that make sense? Before it was about... the all-pervading, you know, and connection more with the bodies. Now we're talking about all-pervading in connection with consciousness. So, Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar explicates that if self is... If the self is accepted as omniscient, and all omniscience is... and all omniscience, as some assume... Oh, omnipresent and all omniscient, as some assume. There will be permanent perception or non-perception. But experience proves otherwise, as there is perception at times and non-perception at other times. The self is omnipresent. There will be eye consciousness always everywhere. Hence, to avoid these difficulties, because if you're all-pervading, then everybody's you. You know, so how do you talk? Well, I'm going to do this, and no, but I'm going to do this. No, that, you know, that... You know, it'd be a whole thing, you know. Is that, you know, it could make a whole, what do you call it? You know, Laurel and Hardy, something from that. So, yeah. Hence, to avoid these difficulties, the self is taken as atomic and has knowledge for its quality. Nonetheless, it will be demonstrated later in Vedanta Sutra 3.2.38. Anena sarva gatatvam ayama shabdari bhiha. That the jiva is not all-pervading, but is the Lord who is all-pervading with medium size, because of statements indicating his pervasion, because of his inconceivable nature. Footnote 52. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura explains that the personal form of Bhagavan is the basis for the all-pervading impersonal Brahman. Lahiri Mahashai said, because otherwise the stance will be is okay, the personal, even if you accept the personal, they may accept the impersonal as higher, because it's more general, and then you have the detail of the personal, like that. So he's showing, no, the person is first, and that person is all pervading. We can say, how is that possible? That's the point. That's God.
Yes.
Right? Lahiri Mahashai said, If the Supreme Personality of Godhead has a form situated within space, then that form must be limited in spatial terms. How then can the spatially limited form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead be the resting place of the all-pervading, spatially limitless, impersonal Brahman? The Babaji replied, even in the material world, the element ether is also all-pervading and spatially limitless. Why then should the impersonal Brahman be considered so glorious merely because it is all-pervading and spatially limitless? Right? Because they're putting it that this quality is the supreme quality. That unlimited aspect. Right? Because that's the one aspect that they can understand from the material consciousness. Right? That and unchanging, that they can catch. Right? Because we want things to be stable. So therefore the supreme being stable. We'd like to be able to do everything and be connected with everything. So the supreme is that it has those qualities. So we don't have a problem with those because we would technically like them ourselves. Right? So they're going to put more emphasis on it. So we see here the Babaji Maharaj is pointing out why you're putting so much emphasis on this. Why that quality? From the splendor of his transcendental limbs, the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests the all-pervading, spatially limitless, impersonal Brahman. And at the same time, his transcendental form is spatially limited, situated in a specific place. Who has seen anyone like him? Because no one is like him, and because he has no rival, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is superior to the impersonal Brahman. Because the impersonal Brahman just has its impersonalness, its all-pervadingness.
Yes.
Right? But the Lord, he, from his limbs, he manifests that unlimited Brahman. And at the same time is limited in time and space. Or not time and space, but space and what is it? Okay? And specific place. Space and place. So that's uniqueness. So you see there's more there in the personal form. The impersonal has less.
Yes.
Right, because even from there, they'll say there's no quality. So where does the qualities of his form and time, space, all these come from? Right, so they couldn't come from impersonal Brahman. They come from Krishna. He has these. Does that make sense?
Yes.
No.
Maharaj, if you say that the aspect of impersonal Brahman is not there in the person, then also the person is Bhagavan is complete, right?
The Bhagavan is
complete.
Complete if it's not there or if it is there?
If the impersonal Brahman is not an aspect, let's see, it's an assumption. But if the impersonal aspect is not there, still Bhagavan is Bhagavan. Because the impersonal aspect is not a necessary criteria for him to make a Bhagavan.
No, but the point is it's it goes along with it. It's just like when you have fire, you have heat and light. They just go together. Right? So the fire is creating the heat and light, and it goes out from there. So we even see here that it's like that. You know, so he's pointing out that ether has unlimited qualities and is not limited by space. So if it's there, so what's the specialness of Brahman? Right? That it's like that, it's there. But the form is the resting place of this. That's what's special. Because we're saying it's all pervading means it's also there, but it needs a source, so it comes from there. And because he has no rival, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is superior to the impersonal Brahman. This form, his form is omnipotent. Omnipotence, the greatest mercy, and the greatest bliss are gloriously manifest in their completeness. Personally and impersonally exist side by side in the handsome form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Jivadharma, chapter 4. Right, so he doesn't have any problem that these are together. Because then you have, he wants to perform his pastime, so it's all going to be based on, means situated on his Brahman. And then within that, he can do all his activities. Mm-hmm. So the Brahman is subservient to him. Does that make sense? He's not doing something for Brahman. Brahman is serving him. He's not serving Brahman. He's the basis of Brahman, and Brahman serves him. Sri Govinda Bhasya. Siddhanta, according to the idea, anyata, that jiva is consciousness alone, all-pervading, it would mean that there would be eternally consciousness and unconsciousness concerning objects, or there would be restriction of one or the other, anyantara niyama. Right, so he's conscious, but then the elements aren't conscious. So that means if he's all pervading, then he is the wall, and so therefore, why is the wall unconscious since he's conscious? So you'd have to be both at the same time. Does that make sense? The soul is all pervading, then you're conscious, right? But now that means he has to be pervading the wall also. If we're saying all pervading, but the wall is not conscious. Right? And we're not conscious of what the wall is feeling. So therefore, that means at that point, the soul is unconscious. So he's simultaneously conscious and unconscious. How is that working? Mm-hmm. Yes.
But the same thing we claim about the Lord.
But he's conscious of the wall.
And how can we prove that?
By taking up devotional service.
Speaking of philosophy here.
That is philosophy.
Because if we claim that the jiva, yeah, I'm taking the role of the poem.
I see.
If we say that the jiva is simultaneously conscious and unconscious, so we say that we are conscious of this wall, we see that it exists.
Right.
We don't have to be conscious of every brick of it.
Yes, but the Lord is. But because otherwise, how? Okay, let us say we're even conscious of those bricks. We know that they're there.
We paid for them.
Yes, okay. Yeah, so we're very conscious of those bricks. Every last one of them. And we wonder, why is that person walking off with one of them?
Yes.
So, but that potency of brickness, is that us?
No.
So that's the Lord.
But
so he's what we know and more.
But he has nothing, but this brickness has nothing to do with our being conscious or unconscious. Because they don't claim that, at least that's what I understand, that we don't, that we are the support of everything.
Yes.
We're just conscious of it.
But you're only conscious of some things. Are you conscious of what's on the other side of the wall? No, but the Lord is. So how could we be all pervading for not conscious of what's on the other side of the wall? Because we're taking it because of the point of that all pervading.
Mm.
You know, we're saying that the soul is atomic in size, and by the Lord's arrangement, you're conscious of the full body through the grace of the life airs.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The prana. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Because as the prana is being removed, the consciousness is also gone. So,
yeah.
So we can't tell what's on the other, because we don't know. We're not all pervading. Well, the Lord does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that. It is clear the entire world that conscious and unconsciousness both exist. If the cause of this were a jiva that is conscious only and also all pervading, then consciousness and unconsciousness would both be perceived simultaneously at every moment by the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that means everything would be both conscious and unconscious.
Mm.
But we see some things are conscious, some things are unconscious. Right? And you'd always see it at the same time, but it's all pervading. But you see that there's difference. Sometimes there's conscious, sometimes there's unconsciousness. No? I'm not saying it.
I'm not saying that.
If this all-pervading jiva were the cause of consciousness only and not unconsciousness, then no one would ever be unconscious. And if this were all, and if this all-pervading jiva were the cause of unconsciousness only and not consciousness, then no one would ever be conscious. But we see that they're both happening. You know, sometimes it's this, sometimes it's that. Right? It cannot be said that consciousness is created by contact with the senses, and unconsciousness is created when there is no contact with the senses.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the jiva is all-pervading, then it would always be in contact with the senses.
Mm-hmm.
Moreover, according to this idea, since all atmas are all-pervading, they would contact all bodies Thus, they would obtain all enjoyment and suffering of all bodies. So you wouldn't just get your suffering of your body, you get all the enjoyment and suffering of everybody else's body. Right? Which may not necessarily be a great idea. Especially if you're, I say, you know, down at the docks. Right? Then it's a problem.
Hmm. We say that the Lord, he doesn't suffer that fault because he's also Sarvagyan Mukdata because of those qualities.
He's not identifying with the material energy. Material energy is one of his energies that he controls.
But we can also claim that even if the soul is conscious of other things, he might not identify with them and then not suffer or enjoy.
But then you're talking about someone who's on the Atmarama platform.
Example I was thinking about. For example, when we listen to somebody and they have problems. So we are conscious of these people. We understand the environment in this way. But that's not our problem, so we can be very much aloof from it. But still we are conscious.
And so are we like that in all things?
No.
Yes, so then what we can see is that the soul is limited. Right? Because unless you identify with someone else in connection with your mind or body, you won't enjoy or suffer. Right? What's connected, we identify with the body and mind, and because of that, we enjoy or suffer. So those things that we connect to our body and mind will enjoy or suffer connected to that. Does that make sense? And those which we don't, then we won't. So someone else talking about their woes won't bother us because we don't identify them with our body or mind.
Yes.
Are they trying to bring soul to the level of a super soul, or what's their idea?
Because they're leaving. Brahman's not an important part, really, of any of these philosophies. So then, Pradhan is, you know, appreciated that it's the matter. So what's giving the consciousness? So then that must be the soul. But then the problem is where does the soul get this consciousness from? The senses. The senses are part of Pradhan. So that means Pradhan would have to be conscious. So when you leave the Lord out of it, then you end up with so many problems. Yeah. And even if you accept Brahman, then the problem is then what about all the aspects of the controlling the energies? That's Paramatma. Like that. And why the energies and everything does what it does, that's Bhagavan. Because he's the Icha. Right? He's the Lord of the Icha.
Yeah.
So why material nature is there, why it functions the way it is, why the spiritual nature is there, why it functions, that's because of his desire.
Right.
Then controlling that, that's his Paramatma. Right? And then pervading that and being conscious of all, that's his Brahman. So because they don't accept all three features, then there's always going to be a problem. So that's what sets the Vaishnavas apart from all the others. They accept all three features. And of this, that the form is the origin.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? You know, so like that.
So Maharaj, can you say that you see the importance to study deeply in order to be convinced of the three aspects of God?
Yes, of all three, but specifically of Bhagavan. That's the uniqueness of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It brings the Bhagavan aspect to the forefront. The others may bring out his godness, but the personal aspect of the Lord, you know, as Bhagavan, as a personality. Right? We're not saying when you say God that he's not a person, doesn't have a personality, it's just not the main focus.
Yes.
So, but you see, Bhagavan is about him as a person.
Yes.
And then being, but he is God, so that aspect is there. He is Brahman, that aspect is there. So, from the perspective of the Bhagavan, that's how you're perceiving. That's brought out in Srimad Bhagavatam. The others may bring out the other two aspects. And they'll be touching on that, it's there, but they won't be emphasized.
Can we say that? Listen, when listen, Bhagavan, it's included, Brahman and Brahmata are included?
Yes, yes. So when you have Bhagavan, the other two are already included. But at the same time, when you don't include them, that's where you get this overemphasis. You overextend on, let's say, you know, the sahajya aspect.
Yes.
Because they don't accept the knowledge and that, or you're talking about something and they say, oh, that's all jnana.
Yes.
So we're not actually accepting that these are all part of Krishna.
Yes.
You know, otherwise, what's Krishna? Yeah. Like Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill. And so then the internal aspect of him fulfilling the desires of the Brajavasi is to be with Krishna always and see him always. So for 7 days, then no one sleeps or anything. They're all just there seeing Krishna in like this for 7 days. So that aspect is fulfilled. At the same time, he's controlling the demigods. He's controlling what's happening. So that's being done by that the Kriya aspect. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So those things that are these, they all go on, but that aspect may not be appreciated. We only look at the one, but the other is also there.
Yes.
You know, and why are there demigods? Why is all these things happening?
Yes.
So that's because of that aspect.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Why are the realms there? What are they existing on? Right? Because something doesn't exist on nothing. Right? If I want to put the pot down, I have to put it down where there's something for it to sit on. You know what I'm saying? If I go to a well and try to place it there, then, you know, it'll stop where it does have something to sit on. So, Brahman is what everything's sitting on. And Brahman sits on Krishna, so that means everything's sitting on, situated in Krishna. So when that's that, then it all reminds you of him. That's not a problem. These are discussed, right? But otherwise, then one will say, "Oh, these have no taste. Oh, this is all just jnana and all that." But if it's all Krishna, then how is it jnana? Jnana means where you're looking at knowledge without Krishna. It's about the goodness. It's about the logic. It's about that's mode of goodness. But when you're seeing it in connection with Krishna, then you're just engaging in his service. It's the appropriate tool to use to express that point.
If this is not clear, we do exactly as we can say the opponent are presenting.
Because they're functioning in material consciousness, and by habit, we have been engaged in material consciousness for some time.
Yes.
Right? And so you'll see similarities. That's the advantage here of this, is then we can analyze our own devotional service.
Yes, yes.
And if we can analyze our own, then we can analyze others.
Yes.
And, you know, help others with that analyzation. Then you can see, is it spiritual or not? So that's the whole idea here, is just to be able to tell the difference between what's matter and what's spirit.
Yes.
Right? Because the opening of Bhagavatam is there. This Bhagavatam does it in the Puranic format, which is, you know, generally more interesting than using the Nyaya format.
Yes. But they're going the same.
But yeah, they're showing the same point.
Yes.
But here it's obvious what the point is. In the story, you may or may not catch that point, because there's so many things being brought out in the story. And so, depending on realization, we take different parts of it. So. You understand any of this?
Sounds fine.
Okay. The proposition that enjoyment comes from individual karma and individual karma comes from individual desires would be defeated, because then you'd have to say it's all one karma, and all, you know, why is it different? And by the fact that the all-pervading Atma would have all desires of all other Atmas. In other philosophies, those of Gautama and Karnada, there is a similar fault. This effectively refutes the theory that the jiva is all-pervading.
What?
Yes.
In the other side, we can say that karmas are connected.
But all souls' karmas are connected? It means like, let's say, a family or a community or a nation or like that. You know, but you can't say all souls. You know what I'm saying? So it has it. Means there's enough there to that they can make the mistake, but not enough that they can prove it. Is that, you know?
Can we say that because it's a creation of their minds, that's why it's so appealing?
So
appealing.
Yes. Yes.
Sense.
Yeah. Means it's just like.
Don't think too much.
It's just like. The process of, like I said, the process of, let's say, throwing water from the conch shell or distributing the water after the arti, right? Then it's been there all along. Probably, you know, somehow or another, I'm not sure, but it got introduced. You have those little, there's these little, I don't know, those like little far-out funny bottles with decorations and holes and a little sprinkler on the top. And traditionally, it's used a lot for like rose water and stuff. You put that in there, and you use it for sprinkling on things and stuff like that.
This is used in weddings.
You know,
welcome everybody.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like that. But it's also used when you're like you get sweets. You're putting the rose, you know, water and stuff like that. So it has uses for those who use rose water, right? And so then originally they would offer, then they'd pour it into that, and then they'd stick that out. And then that would be then taken around and sprinkled like this. Then you also had where, in India, where they didn't do that, they would throw it, but the pujari would be in their one place and then throw. Or, if it's a very big place, they would walk, because there's a gap down the middle, you know, between the Vyasa-san and the, you know, you may have heard of that from archaic practices in time. The pujari would walk up that, throw on one side, because it was, you know, so big you couldn't get to the back, and then come and throw down the other side. You would also have the thing is when they would throw from the one place, let's say from the altar, then the devotees generally would lean forward a bit or come forward, you know, or in any case, you know, some way to get the water on the head. But now, to explain that, I've seen it, you know, working very nicely in our temples in one temple. You know, and being done, you know, properly by one person, like that. And then now it's because now you have the stage and all that, and the bigger, and then they do, to you know, generally a very good degree. Some of them really have a good arm; they get the water really back. I think, but Nitai Balaram can really throw the water. So, but they're in that sampradaya. Because the only person I've seen that, you know, did it from the beginning was Janani Vasprabhu. You know, Pankajangri Prabhu could do, but I'm just saying it's the same line. Then those pujaris from there that learned, then they can also. But because others didn't, so therefore it makes sense, you know, just, you know, don't throw it in their face, sprinkle it from behind. That, within a nanosecond, all the temples are doing. The other one, you could spend years and years and years trying to explain. It will never happen. But this one, someone comes up to it, it happens immediately. Why? Because it's a manufacture from the mind, so people can relate to that mental concept. But the whole point of respecting the water and all that is gone by this other one. So the effectiveness of sprinkling water seems to be happening, but the effectiveness of respecting that water, because it's come from the Lord, is non-existent. Because when the sprinkles on your head, the first thing is shock, and what's that, and who's that, and what's, you know. Then you figure out, and then it's like, oh, it's that. But do you ever get to the point of respecting the water? Does that make sense? So that's the point, is when the mind is there, things become so easy. And then when it's not, then, you know. Does that make sense? So anything to do with control and enjoy is automatically taken. And depending upon the community, they have a way to apply that. You may not appreciate the other community unless it's explained. Mm-hmm. You know, and then they find lower and lower levels of doing that that are more universal. So that's the problem. That's why I said there is they have so many ideas. You know, that variety of the individual soul bereft of Krishna consciousness has many ideas and activities created in the mind by the external energy. So Maya is actually doing it. The external energy is actually doing it. Is that, and so that's why it works, because now the modes are supposed to act like this. They do it, everyone suddenly, oh, that's the way it is. And then after some time, then it disappears. It's just the modes. That's why we have to be very careful to stick to what the acharyas say. Otherwise, if we don't, then we'll be following the modes. Yes. So, yeah. Yes. However, our theory, which affirms that the jiva is atomic in size and different in each material body, is not refuted by these considerations. Although atomic in size, the jiva can act in any place. Although it cannot act in every place simultaneously, but only sequentially. Right? You can be in any species, in any situation, but in a sequence. You can't do it all at once. By its quality of consciousness, the jiva can pervade its material body and perceive the happiness and other sensations present in the various parts of the material body. Thus, this proposition is faultless. So it's like that. And what's it doing? It's by the material, I mean, by the Lord's life force, by the prana. By the prana, you can appreciate. Does that make sense? Okay. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.16.9. The living entity is eternal and imperishable because he actually has no beginning and no end. He never takes birth or dies. He is the basic principle of all types of bodies, yet he does not belong to the bodily category. The living, because it's due to their desire, they're in a particular body. Right? It's not that the body needs the souls. The souls are the ones that identify with the bodies. The living entity is so sublime that he is equal in quality to the Supreme Lord. Nonetheless, because he is extremely small, he is prone to be illusioned by the external energy. And thus he creates various bodies for himself according to his different desires. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.13.34. One should see that the material world is a distinct illusion appearing in the mind, because material objects have an extremely flickering existence and are here today and gone tomorrow. They can be compared to the streaking red line created by whirling a fiery stick. The spirit soul by nature exists in the single state of pure consciousness. However, in this world he appears in many different forms and stages of existence. The modes of nature divide the soul's consciousness into normal wakefulness, dreaming, and dreamless sleep. All such varieties of perception, however, are actually Maya and exist only in a dream, only like a dream, because the soul is not part of that, though he perceives like that and he thinks he's that. So, yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.